Thank you. At this time, it is a pleasure to introduce our first speaker. Allow me to pause just for a second. We have some keys here. And if they're not claimed before the end of the meeting, I'll take them to security. So if the word gets out, they'll go to security or lost and found, okay? Thanks. So now, at this time, it's a pleasure to introduce Eddie. And Eddie J from the Tri-County area. Thank you, Eddie.
Love you, Eddie.
Too late. I'm Eddie, I'm an addict. I can guarantee you I'm the most nervous person in this room. But that's okay. I'm a newcomer, man. I'm always a newcomer. I'm a newcomer at every meeting. I was told I never know what I might have to go through that day, because I've never been through that day without using drugs. So I'm a newcomer every day. I've been clean for 5 years, 9 months, and 3 days, I think. You know, for me, it started out really fun, man. I just turned 13. I was helping my uncle on the farm, cutting tobacco. And, like every day, him and the other guys that were working there, everybody was older than me. They were up in their 20s. They were, like, really old, you know. And they would disappear, and I didn't know what was going on, and it would just be me and my aunt out in the field, and she would be mumbling under her breath about something. I didn't know. Like I said, man, I was innocent. I didn't know what was going on. And then about 2 weeks into the summer, I got invited to come over there and join them, and, you know, they were smoking this thing, I didn't know what that was. Soon found out, you know, what it was. They were listening to Cheech and Chong on 8-track, you know, for a kid. Back then I was telling a buddy of mine the other day, that, you know, as kids we weren't really exposed to anything at a young age like kids are now today. And he reminded me, like, porno for us was Sears catalog, you know, the underwear section. And that was the truth, man. And, at that time I was introduced to a different language, a different lifestyle, and it was a couple of days later that I found the Hustler magazines and, you know, that he had at his house. And like I say, all that's part of my addiction. That's why I always mention that. But anyway, that was a fun, exciting time for a 13-year-old kid, finding Hustler magazines and just getting high. You know, finding food tasted so much better from the refrigerator. You know, everything was just so much better. I'm sorry. And so that's how it went. And for a long time, it was okay. But everything I used, I always used it out of proportion. I always screwed up. I never could save what I wanted to save. I never could spend, you know, just, this is all I'm going to spend. That always turned around wrong. At the end, it got to the point where the house that I had was no longer mine. I stopped making house payments a long time ago. We were still living there. I say we because it was me and my family, my wife and two stepsons, and I thought it was a good idea that everybody in the house smoked crack along with me. And that's how we lived. You know, we didn't pay no bills. As a result of not paying no bills, we had no electricity, we had no water. I seen no future, but I didn't know any other way at that time. Every day you just get up if you even went to sleep, and just try to find a way of getting high. And I did some things that I'm not proud of, some things I'm not going to talk about in here, but there's a couple things I did, which it's kind of funny now because scrap prices are up so high, but back then they weren't that high. And I cut out, since we didn't have no water, I cut the water pipes out of my house and took them to the scrap yard. That got me through one day. And then my daughter's car, it had a little electrical problem. Whatever it was, I wasn't going to be able to fix it, so I took it to the scrap yard. And that worked out good. That was a lot of money. And then I took my wife's car to the scrap yard, and I took my sister's car to the scrap yard. That, like, almost made a week, you know. And after I got clean a while, my sister said, "Whatever happened to my car?" I said, "I don't know." I don't know. But anyway, man, it was just desperate. Fucking yeah, they say a crackhead's dumb. A crackhead ain't dumb. A crackhead can wake up with no money in his pocket and I would have $300 or $400 worth of dope go through my hands a day. It wasn't all mine, but I would do what I had to do to get high that day. And I was praying, man, to get busted. And we actually had someone that we were was a customer, you could say, that knew that we were on the list to get busted. And you know, I just let things go as they go. You know, it was a wide open crack house 7 days a week, because that was the best way to, the best opportunity. You know, I didn't use up all my resources. A house, and it wasn't even mine, but we were just there. We hadn't got kicked out yet. It was somebody else's house. Somebody else had bought it, but they couldn't get us out of there. And so, anyway, one day we got busted. My wife just got back from a run, and it had been a while, so, you know, I was just itching to get high, man. And I heard this noise, sounded like a 12-gauge shotgun. Heard two more shots. I knew what that was, 9mm. And I thought that they done broke in and shot my sons, and but I was going to get high before I went and found out. And but when I was in the process of lighting it, the door flew open. This cop broke in. You know, he was full gear, mask, whatever. He had his gun up to my head. At that time, what had happened, I found out when the door broke open that he had shot a Rottweiler. And the dog come in there, and not knowing what's going on, bleeding, blood's pumping out of his neck. And and I'm got my shirt, and I'm trying to stick it in his neck to keep him from stop bleeding. And you know, this cop is sticking a gun in my head, telling me to get on the floor. I just wouldn't do it. And finally, another cop come in, and you know, they did what they had to do. Went to jail. Got a 30-year sentence, 20 years for dealing, and a 10-year charge for having guns while dealing. And, you know, in jail, like I was talking to a guy earlier today, man, in jail was better than where I was living. And that's a sick thing to say, but it was the truth. I had clean clothes, man. I had hot and cold running water. I had a toilet that flushed. I had toilet paper, and there was food there. There was somebody else there that was trying to keep control of everything. I didn't have to worry about that. And so jail really wasn't that bad. And a few days into it, we got approached with this way to get out on bond. It's really not a bond, but you get out because the bond was $100,000, and nobody was going to give me $10. I just figured I'd sit in there until the court date. But the worst thing this guy told us, you get out and you pee in a cup. I think it was two or three times a week. I can't remember. I know there was a time in there where there was like 3 days in between peeing where I thought that I could get high and then quit before, in 72 hours I'd be clean, and that never worked, and I don't even know if that's true. But he told us that your first piss test can be dirty, but it has to go down from there. It's like the worst thing you could have told me. As soon as I left the jail, it was on. And as soon as I was able to convince everybody that we weren't narcs, we got out on this deal that we're peeing in a cup. We didn't get out because we're going to tell on everybody. And anyway, that night, my mother-in-law, she put us up. She thought for sure jail would stop, would change our lifestyle. And which there was a few people that thought that way, and it was like gave us a new line of credit. And she set us up in a motel room, and like I said, we started making phone calls, and it was back on. And always was saying that I'm gonna make my pee real dirty, so then it can go down, but. It never happened. And they gave me this list that said had these meetings on it. It said Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And he said, if you don't start going to these meetings, you're going to go back to jail. And like I say, jail wasn't that bad, so I'm not going to no meetings. And, I didn't know what a Narcotics Anonymous was. Narcotics Anonymous, to me, was that Narcotics Anonymous cop that busted into my house and shot my dog. So, it went on, man. I had that meeting list, and I kept peeing dirty. And, it was like coming down to the deadline, and finally my wife said that she was going, and I said, well, you can go, because at that time I did stop. I had a couple days under my belt, and I thought that I was cured. Still, I'm not going into a meeting where there's going to be these drug counselors there and they're going to try and tell me about my problem. Nobody knows what I've been through and what I'm going through and what I got to do to get high every day. So kicking and screaming, I took her. Actually, she called her mother to come get her, and they went to a meeting that wasn't there. They read the meeting list long, and she came back. So I said, well, if you really want to go, I'll take you, but I'm not going in. And we go right down to the street, and come to this church, and there's no sign that's saying where there's a meeting, or I'm not going in a church. And, just sitting in the parking lot. I just remember sitting in the parking lot, like kicking stones, I'm not doing it. You can go on and look around, but I'm not doing it. And this guy pulled up, and he was a plumber like I was at the time. And, he said, are y'all here for the meeting? And I said, yeah. And he said, follow me. And is where the tears start. I don't know what it was at that meeting, man. I've been clean ever since. And it wasn't a there wasn't a college professor in there. It was all drug addicts just like me. And yeah, that's what I had to hear. I had to hear that there was guys in there that sat there and waited for someone who was only 5 minutes away. Waited for 2 fucking hours for somebody that was only 5 minutes away. I mean, that's what used to, you know, I tried to call myself some kind of little dealer thing or whatever, but that's what always used to blow it for me, because I'd have everything planned out just right, and I was re-upping, I had just enough, and that guy wouldn't show up for 2 hours, and I'd have smoked all my shit, and by the time he gets there, all I want to do is smoke that shit, so they ain't selling nothing. Yeah. Just, you know, it's like, say, at the end, man, I just couldn't stop. And then I went to that meeting. I don't know what the hell it was in that meeting, but today I have a hard way of putting it into words. But, you know, if there's any kind of a God, higher power, I call it spirit of recovery now. That's what touches me in my life today, man. And getting to the topic of this meeting, and permanently hip and fatally cool. That's what kept me out, because I didn't want to get clean, man. Clean was getting, that was not for me. What would my friends say? And you know what? When I got clean, man, all them friends, I don't even know where they're at. I really didn't even know half of them. There was, at any given time, there was 15 people in my house, and I'm, like I say, 3 of them were my family, and the rest of them I might have known too, but they were always welcome to lay on the floor at my house if they had something. If they didn't have something, then it was time to go. You got to go. Come back when you got something. But I mean, that's just how a crack house goes. I ain't got to tell y'all about that. Even when I got clean, and hanging around here, it says in that chapter 5 is where the saying is from. And it's like my most favorite chapter in the book. Because, it like gives you a blueprint of this program. And when I came in here, I didn't understand what steps and sponsors and all this crap that y'all were talking about. I didn't understand. And I said that first guy, he was my first sponsor, and he was a plumber like me, and he was able to put it into terms like I understood. He said, you know, these are tools for our recovery, and if you go to use a new tool, you need to read up on it, you need to talk to other people that know how to use this tool, and that's how you learned how to use these tools. When I got to chapter 5, it's like a blueprint of how to work this program. It tells you about doing 90 meetings in 90 days. If y'all are new, please do 90 meetings in 90 days, or get to as close as you can. What I was told at the beginning, if you do 90 meetings in 90 days and you're not satisfied, your pain will surely be refunded. And I believe that. I was also told early on that the secret to recovery, the guy was whispering to me, he said, you want to know the secret? And I said, yeah. And I was all intrigued, and I got up close to him, and he yelled it at me. He said, you don't fucking put it in you. You don't fucking get, you're always an arm's length from a relapse. If you don't pick it up, you can't get high. And that was just like, as simple as one is too many and a thousand's not enough. You know, whoever thought of that, man? So I always thought I could do one and it was going to be all right. I mean, just so, you know, like I was saying, I didn't think anybody knew what was going on with me, but when I got here and I started reading this literature, and I thought somebody had been following me around taking notes. And I still feel that way today, man. There's stuff that I read. I can read it 10 times, and the 11th time I'll pick out something that I've never seen in it before. It's like the book is alive. You know, it's like our literature is just, it lives with me in this program. It grows as I grow. What it's talking about on the workshop is you start to stagnate, and then you start to be too cool for recovery, too cool for meetings. You know, life gets busy, and, you know, I had a period of that in my recovery where meetings weren't the most important thing to me, and, you know, they started taking a back seat, and I started saying that stuff, you know, as long as I'm not using, I'm all right. But there's a lot more to this program than just not using. I mean, that's the most important part, but I've learned to find out the hard way that there's more to this program, because, you know, every time I think that I'm the only one, I'll hear somebody else share the same thing that I'm going through or been through. I had some really ups and downs about coming and chairing this meeting. I was Leon Violent told me that I was going to do this. I had no idea that I would be sitting up here in Ocean City. And I was really, Friday night, it hit me really hard, and I was like, let's get in the car and go, man, and run. They'll find somebody. But that's not what you do around here. When you're asked to do something, man, you do it no matter what. And no matter what happens up here, I'm not going to use over it. I was also told that you have to give it away to keep it. I didn't understand that. How do you give something away to keep it? And when I heard it, you got to share. You know, for addicts don't share, man. I don't know. That just shows you right there what a powerful program this is. You got addicts up in here giving away stuff and sharing. And, I don't know, man. I think that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you. For sharing with us this evening. Again, I'm Honey and I'm an addict. And once again, we do have some keys here, and if they're not claimed by the end of this meeting, I'll find security or, you know, some lost and found to turn them into. If someone's wanting